Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. U.S. student Otto Warmbier, held in captivity for more than a year by North Korea, has been medically evacuated back to the United States. The family of University of Virginia student said he is in a coma. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson made public Warmbier's return Tuesday.
The Department of State has secured the release of Otto Warmbier from North Korea. He is on his way en route home to be reunited with his family. We continue our discussions with the North Korean regime regarding the release of the three other American citizens that have been detained.
Media reports say Warmbier fell ill from botulism and slipped into a coma after being given a sleeping pill following his March 2016 trial. He was sentenced to 15 years hard labor for trying to steal a propaganda banner. Korea Society Senior Policy Director Stephen Orpier said at some point there'll have to be an accounting.
So there will certainly be, beyond the human tragedy, repercussions in terms of demands for accountability, because this happened under North Korea's arcane and inhuman policy of detaining Americans, and there will be demands on Capitol Hill. I'm sure there will be demands in other parts of government, and certainly there will be demands among the general public as this is reported and as more details come out.
Warmbier's release came after rare high-level U.S.-North Korean contacts in Norway. A U.N. diplomat has warned the Security Council that a security vacuum exists in Central Africa following the withdrawal of Ugandan, South Sudanese, and U.S. troops tracking the rebel lord's resistance army.
I am concerned about the impact of this withdrawal, as it will create a security vacuum that may be exploited by LRA and other armed groups operating in the region.
Comments made by Francois Lucendi-Fall. This is VOA News. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions has denounced as an appalling and detestable lie the idea that he would collude with Russia involving last year's election, but he declined to answer questions by members of the Senate Intelligence Committee about conversations he had with President Donald Trump on the matter.
It's a longstanding policy of the Department of Justice not to comment on conversations that the Attorney General has had with the President of the United States for confidential reasons that really are founded in the co-equal branch powers in the Constitution of the United States.
The Attorney General, who served as an advisor to candidate Trump, said there was nothing improper when he met twice last year with Russia's U.S. Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. Saudi Arabia's foreign minister said there is no blockade of Qatar and said his country will provide food and medical supplies despite joining three other countries in breaking diplomatic relations with Doha over its alleged ties to terrorists.
The ports are open. The airports are open. What we have done is we have denied them use of our airspace, and this is our sovereign right. The limitation on the use of Saudi airspace is only limited to Qatari Airways or Qatari-owned aircraft, not anybody else. The seaports of Qatar are open. There is no blockade on them. Qatar can move goods in and out whenever they want. They just cannot use our territorial waters. So technically, this is not a blockade.
Foreign Minister Adel Joubert was in Washington meeting Secretary of State Tillerson. A State Department spokesperson, Heather Nauert, said the conversation between the two was hopeful.
Together they talked about the need and the agreement to come together, to work together. And I would characterize the mood and the approach to that as being one that is hopeful, that believes that the worst is behind us.
She declined to say Qatar supports terrorists, but said all parties are working toward agreement on combating terrorism. Hundreds of refugees have fallen ill following a mass outbreak of food poisoning at a camp for the displaced near the embattled Iraqi city of Mosul. Some 300 have been hospitalized after breaking their Ramadan fast with an iftar meal late Monday. Former Panamanian President Ricardo Martinelli is in U.S. custody until a June 20 hearing at a federal court in Miami. He stands accused in his country of using public funds to spy illegally on political rivals. He was arrested near Miami Monday. Martinelli denied any wrongdoing, insisting his successor, President Juan Carlos Varela, is engaged in a political campaign against him. U.S. central bank policymakers are meeting in Washington reviewing monetary policy. Analysts expect them to announce another key interest rate hike on Wednesday, despite lackluster job growth and low inflation. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, June 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The Speaker of Zambia's Parliament suspends 48 members of the opposition UPND for boycotting President Lungu's speech.
That is totally shocking, totally unnecessary. And it has confirmed that this administration, this party in power, has become dictatorial.
Charles Kakoma is spokesman for Zambia's main opposition UPND party. South Sudan political parties call on IGAD leaders to be more forthcoming about how to fully implement the 2015 peace agreement. The UN resettles albino refugees due to threat in Malawi. And Somalia's government says 50 al-Shabaab fighters have surrendered since an amnesty offer was made 2 months ago.
These are the active combatants who are fighting in the front line, who are armed. Principally, what they are telling us is now that they are realizing that they are on the wrong side of the law, and that's how they are defecting at the moment.
Abdi Rashid Abdullahi Mohamed is Somalia's defense minister. Zimbabwe's health minister says bird flu, which infected more than 140,000 chickens at a poultry farm near Harare, is under control. And African fashion designers gear up for Dakar Fashion Week next month. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development, UPND, says President Edgar Lungu's government and the ruling Patriotic Front Party want to create a one-party state to suppress the will of the people. This comes after the Speaker of the National Assembly, Patrick Matibini, Tuesday suspended for 30 days 48 UPND parliamentarians for boycotting President Lungu's speech in March this year. The Speaker called on the members to resign if they do not want to recognize President Lungu's election. He also said the suspended MPs will not be paid their salaries and allowances during their time of suspension. But UPND spokesman Charles Kakoma says the parliament owed their allegiance to the citizens and the constitution and not to the president. He also says the MPs who boycotted the president's speech were exercising their freedom of speech as enshrined in the constitution and should not be criminalized.
That is totally shocking, totally unnecessary. And it has confirmed that this administration, this party in power, has become dictatorial. The essence of that is to create a situation where only one party will remain in parliament and pass laws on behalf of everybody. And now the laws that will come out of that parliament will no longer be representative of the will of the people, but representative on the wishes of one political party.
To the Speaker's credit, Mr. Kakoma said that the action of the UPND members of parliament was unjustified and unbefitting of the conduct of a member of parliament, that they pledged allegiance to the president of Zambia, and they have to at least respect the president.
That is, a wrong conclusion on the part of the Speaker. This was not the first time that members of Parliament have either walked out of Parliament or indeed boycotted a session of Parliament or indeed any part of Parliament that the MP or MPs feel that they are uncomfortable and would not like to participate in it. And in the past, speakers before him have either warned a member of Parliament or indeed reprimanded a member of Parliament or imposed the other sanctions that would enable the parliament to continue functioning smoothly. But this time around, by suspending a huge number of members of parliament, it has the potential to bring a crisis to parliament, to the operations of parliament, because many of those members of parliament that have been suspended are chairing committees of parliament. And without them, no reports will be tabled in parliament. And in any case, even in committees of parliament, they will not be able to form columns. And you would imagine how they can proceed with parliamentary duty when that situation arises. So basically, the Speaker has crippled the parliament, and it's not in the best interest of this country that Parliament must be crippled because they can't conduct business due to lack of quorums, especially in the parliamentary committees. But in the main house, of course, they'll be able to proceed with business, and that business will be basically conducted by one political party. So it will no longer be laws passed by the National Assembly, but by the Patriotic Front Party.
I guess, Mr. Kakoma, if the Speaker says that the members of Parliament pledge allegiance to the President and therefore must be respectful to the President, I'm thinking in terms of the United States members of Congress. Are your members of Parliament elected by the people, and to whom do you owe your allegiance, to the President or to the people of Zambia?
The members of Parliament allegedly have loyalty to the people of Zambia and to the Constitution of Zambia, and not to one individual. So when the members of Parliament disagree with the head of state, or indeed criticize him, that should not be an offense, because that is within their democratic rights to criticize him. And indeed, if that form of criticizing includes either refusing to listen to his speech, or indeed walking out of Parliament, that should not be a punishable offense, but part of the democratic process.
The Speaker, Mr. Matibini, quotes an act of law saying that the suspended members of Parliament will not be paid their salaries or allowances. Is this also the law in Zambia?
Well, that is excessive and potentially an abuse of power. Of course, the law that is being referred to is subsidiary legislation, but the members of Parliament are there, and their duties and privileges and freedoms and rights enshrined in the supreme law, the Constitution of Zambia. They are free to conduct their business under the Constitution, and therefore relying on a subsidiary legislation is just an abuse of the laws of Zambia.
On two occasions that members of Parliament of the UPND boycotted President Edgar Lungu's speech to the Parliament. So you do not see any problem with that?
No, and I think in future, if the member of Parliament thinks they should still boycott his speech, they should be free to do so. You can't gang it. That will be infringing on their freedoms of speech as enshrined in the Constitution as members of Parliament. They enjoy freedom of speech, and freedom of speech includes the freedom of how they express themselves in that Parliament, either by talking or keeping quiet or walking out or absenting themselves. Is still delivering a message of what they want to do in Parliament, and therefore cannot be criminalized.
Mr. Kakoma, it's so nice to talk with you. Always thank you very much for speaking with us at this time.
Thank you very much.
Charles Kakoma, spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, UPND party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Opposition political parties in South Sudan say the peace agreement signed in 2015 failed to bring lasting peace to the country. They say they welcome the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, known as IGAD's, call to revive the agreement. But one opposition leader says IGAD should be more straightforward and bring to the table the main signatories of the agreement to talk about how best it can be fully implemented. Nabil Biagio reports from Juba.
Peter Mayen, chairman of People's Liberal Party, says the peace agreement was supposed to bring a permanent ceasefire across South Sudan, improve the economy, strengthen democratic institutions, and ensure accountability for wartime crimes. Mayen points out that none of that has happened.
The parties claim to be implementing the agreement, but yet we see increase and escalation of violence. The same applies to the economic crisis, and as well the level or the governance, including the rule of law, is deteriorating. Judges are on the strike.
Mayen says all the signatories to the peace deal, including the rebels in opposition political parties, should participate in the proposed forum to revive the agreement.
We welcome the IGAD communique that is extremely important through the given forums, so that the parties are pressured to bow down and implement the peace agreements and peace returns to South Sudan.
Ajang Bior is Secretary General of the United Sudan's African Parties. He says there have been many delays in implementing a number of provisions of the 2015 peace deal. He says a new forum would help reset the dates and start fresh on tracking the toughest issues.
One of the reasons why such a forum will be important is that the period for implementation of the agreement has not really been started at the right period. So adjusting the timelines, I think, will be useful to both parties, or to the parties actually.
The deputy chairman of United Democratic Party, Stuart Soro, says IGAD should talk directly to the signatories of the peace agreement, including former Vice President Riek Machar and the former detainees, and bring them to the negotiating table.
IGAD knows very well which parties were signatory to the former agreement. If they wanted to revive this, they should have called all the parties to the agreement first and see their reaction, by not coveting other parties which are not known.
By starting new talks instead of recommitting to the 2015 agreement already signed, Soro worries IGAD might actually make things worse.
They may complicate things more than this, because you have seen there are a lot of different rebel groups emerging, coming up and complicating the whole history of the peace agreement. What we are after is to see to it that the agreement which was signed in Addis by the two groups must be implemented in spirit and letter.
Soro says all of the South Sudan's political parties are part and parcel to the signed peace agreement and therefore must be involved in the efforts to revive the deal. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Today's Wednesday, June 14th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. The Somali government says more than 50 al-Shabaab fighters have defected from the terrorist group since President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo announced an amnesty more than 2 months ago. Defense Minister Abdi Rashi Abdullahi Mohamed told Viewers Somali Service that the newest defectors arrived Tuesday at a military base 40 kilometers south of the capital Mogadishu. The defense minister said the militants are defecting because they realize they are on the wrong side of the law.
Today, there are two of them who have defected, but in total, the last 60 days, we can say around 50 of them have defected.
And what kind of Al-Shabaab members have defected?
These are the active combatants who are fighting in the front line, who are armed, and when they are defecting, they are coming with their arms and their ammunition. And you can see that these are the active, combatants of Al-Shabaab that are defecting now.
What did they tell you? Why are they defecting?
Principally, what they are telling us is now that they are, with the time, they are realizing that they are on the wrong side of the law. They have been, pushed to a situation where initially they were told on a religious perspective, but now they are realizing that, when they see the act of Al-Shabaab in terms of humiliating, extortion, and killing, and, disturbing the public, that has made them to regret why they have joined, and if they get the opportunity, they don't waste the time, and that's how they are defecting at the moment.
Did they say how they heard about the amnesty offer by the president?
Yes, they say they had the amnesty. The channel of communication was they got from their relatives, some of them through the phone calls, but some say they got through the media, because these people, some of them have the access of listening to the radios, although sometimes they say they have been denied to use the telephone. Sometimes they get restriction in terms of accessing the media. But again, as a Somali community, we normally say this is an oral society. Message in Somalia doesn't get, delayed. It goes like bushfire, and everybody gets the slightest message that it comes out of the senior management of the government.
And what's the government's plan in order to rehabilitate them?
The government has a plan. It has a rehabilitation center. It has the disarmament center. It has a program for these defectors, and we have other strategic partners that are helping the government in supporting, these defectors, these kind of defectors in several locations. And we have one of the biggest centers to rehabilitate the defectors in Mogadishu.
Abdi Rashi Abdullahi Mohamed is Somalia's defense minister. He was speaking with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Since June of last year, the UN Refugee Agency in Malawi has been resettling albino refugees to North America amid continued threats to people living with albinism in the Southern African country. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
The UN Refugee Agency says albino refugees living in Malawi report harassment, like one refugee now resettled in Canada who said people kept trying to cut his hair. People with albinism and absence of pigment in their skin, hair and eyes are attacked in Malawi and other parts of Africa because of false beliefs that potions made from their body parts bring good luck and wealth. The UNHCR says at least 20 people with albinism have been killed in the country since 2014. More than 100 other albino individuals, including children, have faced rights violations, including abductions and grave exhumations. The Associate Resettlement Officer for the UNHCR in Malawi is Sebastian Hewick.
This situation also creates a climate of fear for the persons of concern with albinism. They are regularly referred to as money or cash machine. We requested the government of Malawi to expedite the refugee status determination procedures for those cases that were still asylum seekers due to their vulnerability.
For the past year, the United Nations has been screening eligible albino refugees and their families at the Dzaleka refugee camp in Malawi. It is home to more than 30,000 people, mainly from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, Rwanda, Ethiopia, and Somalia. UN officials are processing the resettlement of a seventh family taking part in the program. Six families have been relocated to Canada. The officials asked VOA not to publish the total remaining number of families who have applied for resettlement for safety reasons. This program is for refugees, but Malawians with albinism also remain under threat. Last year, following the murder of a 2-year-old albino child in central Malawi, President Peter Mutharika addressed the nation and vowed to stop the attacks. Government spokesperson Nicholas Dausi says authorities are doing what they can.
We have deployed the police in all areas where there are schools with people with albinism to protect them. And also, we have taken an initiative that in villages and areas where there is a family or families with people with albinism, there is a constant surveillance.
Meanwhile, in 4 districts in Malawi with most incidents, UN agencies are distributing protective materials to people with albinism. These include lights, reflector jackets, bicycles, and whistles. But the president of the Association of People with Albinism in Malawi, Overstone Kondowe, says the threat is regional. He cited the murder of a 12-year-old Malawian boy with albinism last month in neighboring Mozambique, where he was visiting relatives.
And we also had a robbery of a graveyard in Nsangi and as well as Choro, the same month of May. This demonstrates that there's still some porous in our security initiatives and the strategies that we are using.
Kondowe says security measures are not enough. He said there needs to be a widespread education campaign to debunk the false beliefs about people living with albinism. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
Zimbabwe's health minister, Dr. David Peri-Renyantwa, says avian influenza, commonly known as bird flu, which infected more than 140,000 chickens at a poultry farm near Harare, is under control. Dr. Peri-Renyantwa says the farm, which has been quarantined, has assured government that it will depose of all the infected birds in order to stop the spread of the highly pathogenic H5N8 avian influenza. Botswana, South Africa, and Mozambique have banned Zimbabwe chicken imports after the disease killed 7,000 chickens.
Yeah, the situation is that this particular flu or influenza virus called H5N8 was identified in some chickens at Ivan's. And the reaction there was very quick. The Department of Agriculture went there very quickly and was advised that over 2 million birds will be culled to make sure that this virus is stamped out.
But is there any harm to someone who may have consumed some of this chicken unknowingly?
Generally, H5 any aid affects only birds and other animals, but not human beings. So generally, there's no that danger. However, we advise our people when that particular flu has been identified that they don't eat or consume those particular birds. Partly because they may get that flu, but it usually is a very mild flu, but also because there is a danger of mutation, and we don't get that particular, normally affecting birds, now affecting human beings, because there would have been a mutation that would have occurred.
But at the moment, would you say that the situation has been contained or not in the country?
I would say the situation has been contained in the country. The Ivans is the one that is the way it was identified, and I think the Agricultural Department or Ministry of Agriculture has been very alert to try and look at other sensors to see if there's any such reported symptoms, and that has not occurred so far. But we will be getting an update from the Ministry of Agriculture tomorrow in our cabinet, and perhaps we'll get a better update in terms of where else it could have affected in the country. But so far, it is Ivans.
Dr. David Parry Ranyantwa is Zimbabwe's health minister. He was speaking from Harare with Marvelous Nyahuyi of the US Studio 7 program. The 15th edition of Dakar Fashion Week will take place next month, with dozens of mostly African designers featuring their collections. Founder and designer Adama Paris spoke to Ricky Stryak about how the event has changed through the years and what her favorite part of the week happens to be.
We are not even where I want us to be yet. So yeah, when I started 15 years ago, I dream about a lot of things, and I'm glad we're getting there. And I'm glad we've been able to do it these 15 years.
And how do you think it's changed? What are some of the most significant changes that you think have occurred?
Oh, yeah, changed a lot. We, like, 15 years is like a teenager. It, like, we started, it was, when I came 15 years ago, there was no fashion week, no fashion, major fashion show. So we created something, and people are really looking forward to that kind of fashion. It's not only about fashion, it's about celebrating our city, actually. Like, we do tourism because we kind of invite lots of people, all of them. I'm really proud that we've been able to launch and to promote and to explore this designer from Senegal Festival and other country in Africa. And also the models, like this year in all our casting, we have 800 people coming from all over Africa. This year was amazing. There were like 6 countries coming just for the casting. We're trying to grow our industry. So far, we did a good job. There's so much more to achieve, but I'm looking back. I'm happy.
I wanted to ask about the défilé, the street défilé in Niaratali. Why the street parade?
Yeah, that's my favorite part. That's my baby.
And why is it your baby? Why is it your favorite part, the street parade?
We started the défilé 5 years ago. We were going to the suburbs, to Gediawai, to Parcel, Pekin. And we had a show in, I will always remember that, in Gediawai. And there were 25,000 people out there looking at us.
That was Adama Paris, founder of Dakar Fashion Week. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. And that's it for this Wednesday, June 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotte and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you to have a lovely day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the challenges facing women and girls in Africa on their road to empowerment. We'll examine the current situation and look ahead at the way forward. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. on the internet. You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.